the Mark Stein Show. And now, here's Mark.
Hey, welcome along. It is the Mark Stein Show. We are just departing Grand Cayman in the fabulous crown colony of the Cayman Islands. We have all our cruisers with us. We have a lot of Americans here, and then the others are Canadians, Australians, New Zealanders from various parts of the Commonwealth who are adjusting to the new reign of this one guy in red ermine. We're going to keep Conrad on stage, and joining us will be our friend from a few days earlier, Miss Samantha Smith. Come out here, Samantha. And there's a picture I post. This was a tweet of Samantha's. She had her, I forget what the occasion was, but there was a picture of Samantha with a huge Union Jack. And it reminded me, actually, Conrad will remember this, Miss Dominion of Canada 1917 in her beautiful red ensign dress. Yep. To mark the 50th anniversary of Canada. So we thought we'd ask Samantha to join us for a few reflections on the new reign. We have had a new king for about a year and a half now, after a remarkable 70-year reign. To put it in American terms, when Her Majesty the Queen ascended to the throne, Harry Truman was in the White House. So she covered a lot of ground, and it's kind of slightly weird for any of us who have no memories of any other monarch to be adjusting to this new king. How's it going so far, Samantha?
I think that King Charles has simultaneously managed to overperform and underperform at the same time. You know, if you think about the circumstances under which he took the throne, when compared to his mother, obviously Queen Elizabeth, this was a young woman of just 25 ascending to the throne amid a post-war thirst for modernity and change. Meanwhile, King Charles ascended at a time when both the country and the monarchy were in were in a complete disarray. It's quite, I would say it's quite humbling to see the degradation of the monarchy across 70 years, and how seemingly one woman was able to keep the entirety of our monarchistic tradition afloat for such a long time. And yet the climate king himself seems to have, even with a recent resurgence in popularity because of the sins of his son, it's only by the pure liberty that Prince Harry seems to be even more unpopular than King Charles in personal reputational terms.
Yes.
that King Charles has managed to avoid the scrutiny that he would otherwise be facing as a monarch who came in under a wash of scrutiny for his net zero pledges. Yep. for suggesting that people should change the temperature of their pools to combat climate change.
No.
And he can't even seem to operate a ballpoint pen by himself.
No, this is a man, he's telling you guys how to live. He says the age of consumerism has been terrible. And he was actually the first person, if you look at the World Economic Forum's Great Reset video, he's actually the first guy in that, speaking at Davos and saying how we need a Great Reset and we've got to roll back capitalism and all the rest of it. And then after he's given that speech, he gets in his car and his chauffeur drives him to his other palace. But you guys have to learn to live differently. I always get the feeling, Conrad, you appreciated Her Late Majesty, but I've always slightly had the feeling that you're somewhat more ambivalent about monarchy in general.
I think that where you have a governmental system that works, you keep that system. And most of the monarchies that are extant now in advanced countries are parts of systems at work. The Japanese emperor and the king of Jordan, and certainly the British monarchy, Spanish, Dutch, Belgian, and most of Scandinavia. And they seem to work. So if I were, and I am in fact a British citizen, so I'm in favor of maintaining the monarchy. But it is vulnerable, and I think any country starting out, either setting itself up as a country or changing its system for other reasons, wouldn't go there. I don't think the hereditary principle works, because what you've seen many times in history where it may work for a while, but then it goes terribly haywire. I mean, the greatest age of Rome is when the emperors adopted their successors, from Trajan to Hadrian to Antoninus Pius to Marcus Aurelius, almost a century. And then they went back to promoting the elder son, and it was a disaster. And that does happen. You're always going to get a rotten apple eventually. Now, they haven't had one in Britain for a time, although Edward VIII, who they shuffled out after 6 months, might have been one.
But he was, I don't know how, because we didn't really go to Nassau or anywhere central in the Bahamas, but there are still people in the Bahamas who will tell you what a rotten governor of the Bahamas he was during the Second World War, Edward VIII.
Yeah, he was an elegantly dressed man, certainly, but politically pretty dodgy, I think. But they shuffled him out, and King George VI was a very distinguished king, and so they make it work. And there is a lot of ceremony and history to it, so I think it's a good thing. But in the abstract, I believe the French and the Americans have it right. I think you should not have a chief of state who is a figurehead. The chief of state should be the most powerful political personality, as in the president of France and of the United States.
Do you want to push back on that, Samantha?
Yes, I think that while the American system, I will admit, does have its benefits when it comes to the executive power of the president, especially. But I think it would be remiss to not mention the undying soft power of the monarchy and especially her late Queen Elizabeth, her fundamental role in supporting the end to racial segregation, for example, that famous dance in Ghana. You can think about, even though I would say that this is more of a negative influence than a positive one, King Charles's appearances at COP28 and his various forays to Geneva to...
Well, just hold up there, because the one thing I like about the monarchy is I think it's great to have something bigger than politicians, because otherwise you have a society in which politicians are the big shots. And I think it's actually good to have something that's above that. And, the guy below is no more or less than the king's first minister, and who really cares about that? And I'm slightly disturbed because Conrad's talking about executive presidents like the French and American presidents. And when you talk about the king appearing at COP28, so he's going there and he's speaking as the king about net zero and climate change and all the rest. He's speaking as a politician. When you have his son, William, the Prince of Wales, issued this extraordinary statement about Gaza the other day. That's the Prince of Wales acting as a politician. Is this dangerous ground for them, Conrad?
I think it could be. I think the king has done well, but he does have sort of odd, flaky, and inconsistent views about the environment. He never understood what Thatcher had done for the country, for example, unlike his mother, who, she had 10 prime ministers die while she was the queen, and she only went to 2 funerals, and as she said privately, to the ones of the prime ministers who'd saved the country, Mr. Churchill and Mrs. Thatcher. And the prince has spent he spent too much time in a kind of a politically weightless condition, and he doesn't understand what the average person thinks. You're right. I mean, he's sort of complicit in the nonsense of Davos, and yet he is conveyed in a Rolls-Royce Phantom 5 to have his lunch every day, but tells the public to live under thatch and take, carpools and public transit system. Yeah. I mean, he's got to be careful because they could turn on him very quickly if he makes a mistake there. But with that said, I think he's off to a good start. I want to just take up on one thing. I don't think that the chief of state should be a strictly ceremonious person. I think it should be, as I said, the senior executive person. But where it is a figurehead, I think a monarchy is better than a republic like Germany or Italy, where the president is just a stand-in for a deposed dynasty.
Yeah,
and de Gaulle's great achievement, when you get right down to it, was that he ended 180 years of quarreling between the republicans and the monarchists by creating a monarchy and calling it a republic. I mean, he really was a monarch, but he was an elected monarch.
That's true, because the Fourth Republic was like Germany and Italy, and a lot of it, where you just have some non-entity as president.
And non-entities as premiers most of the time, too.
Yeah, no, that's true. You're extremely, I think you're like a third of Conrad's age, Samantha, and you're like a fifth of my age or whatever it is. But you represent the coming generation. And all my life in Canada, for example, people have assumed, if you read the Globe and Mail or the Toronto Star, they've always assumed that there's an inexorable tie, and that young people are naturally resentful of the monarchy and in the end will be the ones who get rid of it. Is that true in the UK?
Well, I certainly hope not. I think that, the fatal misstep of the monarchy in Great Britain, of King Charles, would be to acquiesce to the desire for a slimmed-down monarchical system and for a slimmed-down role for the monarchy in the country's operations. Mm. For a coronation, for example, that only 6% of Britons said that they felt very strongly about and 50-odd percent said they couldn't give two hoots about, the last thing that the monarchy should be doing is capitulating to the desire to scale it down, because scaling down is just one step away from complete and total defamation and annihilation. For a monarchy to be run on a shoestring is to go against the very principle of a monarchy, which is that it should transcend the national picture. It shouldn't be reflective of the population. The Queen, for example, was always very private about her life because she felt as though showing the monarch to be mortal and to be human was to take away the aspirational quality of it and to take away this idea that the monarchy can be reduced to a single person. And for King Charles, for example, the refusal to rise in the state in the golden-crusted state carriage, which admittedly even Queen Victoria tried to avoid going in as much as possible because it was apparently wildly uncomfortable as far as gold carriages go.
It was terrible for your sciatica.
Precisely.
But it's one reason for Queen Victoria not to want to inflame her sciatica. It's another thing for the king to think that he's somehow more connected with his people if he just rides to the coronation in the back of a white van or whatever.
Precisely.
I mean, that seems to be. Do you agree? Do you agree with that? I mean, I mentioned before you came on, Conrad, that fabulous outfit you wore as honorary colonel of the Governor General's Foot Guards to accompany the Queen in Ottawa. And I take it from that there's a side of you that appreciates a monarchy that at least knows how to dress up when it has to.
There's a slight story to that. The Canada being Canada, it doesn't have a summer uniform for senior officers. So the honorary colonel, which is as the name implies, does not indicate that the bearer of that title has anything to do with the armed forces or ever has had. But it's an honor, and it's a distinguished regiment. The honorary colonel of the Governor General's Foot Guards has a uniform that is a winter uniform, but it only has events at which the honorary colonel is expected to be present in the summer. And in the summer of 1997, Her Majesty the Queen was in Canada and was presenting the regiment with new colors. And so my presence was requested. So this was my uniform. The temperature was 99 degrees Fahrenheit. It made Jamaica seem like the South Pole. And I am, animals sweat and men perspire and women glow, but I looked like I just emerged from a Turkish bath. And the Queen appeared and said, in a very nice light summer dress, with the Duke of Edinburgh at a straw hat. The Queen said, I used to encounter her occasionally in London in the normal course. She said, I'm not used to seeing you dressed like this. So I plucked a line from Elvis Presley to Mr. Nixon. And I said, Your Majesty, you dress for your job and I dress for mine. Oh, that's very good, she said. I agree with your point. But Charles, in a slimmed down monarchy, you take all these so-called lesser royals, like Princess Michael or Princess Alexandra, the cousins of the king, and they're just off the public payroll. And I think it's a kind of a brutal treatment of them. You know, they were brought up to be royals, and it's not their fault if opinion changes or the identity of the monarch changes and he has different views, and they're kind of cut off, and some of them are struggling a bit, and that should not happen. Britain is a great country, and the members of the royal family, you can argue about what level of luxury they should enjoy, but they shouldn't be embarrassed. And I think he's a little nasty that way, and I think he's a bit nasty to the Duke of York. I mean, yes, the Duke of York made a mistake, and he should have been more careful about getting that close to Jeffrey Epstein, but he didn't do anything wrong himself, There's no evidence that he did, and God damn it, it's the king's brother, and he should show a little humanity, I think.
I think when the quote-unquote higher royals are behaving as badly as they have been in recent years, when you think of lesser royals, obviously Princess Anne is not a lesser royal in any capacity, but as far as public profile goes, she's always flown more so under the radar, and yet she is unwaveringly the most dedicated and most efficient
and most intelligent working
member of the royal family. Yeah. And so when you're in situations as we are at the moment, where Kate Middleton is believed to be in an underground bunker beneath Kiev, and Prince Harry is off lording around with D-list celebrities working on his next inevitably failing Netflix deal. You need some of the lesser quote unquote royals to step in and do the dirty work.
Well, open the factories and stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, it's a big thing.
Well,
you're from Durham, right? Well, yeah. If you want to open a factory, you get the Duke of Kent or somebody to
precisely,
do it, right?
Precisely, yeah. I think.
But as you say, a lot of these ones, I mean, the Princess Alexandra represented the Queen at the independence ceremonies of half of Africa. I mean, she was present at the dawn of whatever it is, 15 new nations. How can you just say suddenly, the King just say, oh, well, from now on, it's all about me. As you say, there's a nasty streak to him.
There's lots to do. I mean, it's easy to mock them as people who live in palaces and are chauffeured about and get around well and are well taken care of, but they work like beavers, and the Queen worked hard all her life until she was 96. And she really worked hard, and if there was a disaster somewhere, she'd go in person, and she set a high example, and in general, they all followed it. I mean, even ones the public doesn't like so much, like Prince Andrew. I mean, he was a hard worker. That British trade mission he had was very effective. I saw it in action in France once and in Canada and in New York. He did a lot of work.
Precisely, and the purpose of the royal family in the modern global stage has always been one of diplomacy and furthering the ideals of the British Empire, so to speak, as much as we can in an era of colonialism, of anti-colonialism, and everything is racist. But for the monarchy to slim itself down and abandon these very core duties, it only furthers the argument for republicanism, which is if the royal family isn't performing these duties that they have had a quote-unquote God-given or birthright to, then what is their purpose at all? If it isn't to pass legislation in any real capacity other than signing the form on the dotted line, if it isn't to make bold political statements at great climate change conferences or addressing the United Nations whenever, you know, whatever Klaus Schwab and those that lot want to do, if they don't have any real political grounding and they aren't performing their diplomatic and apolitical duties, then what are they there for? You know, they are the architects of their own self-destruction in that case.
Well, that's an interesting point. This the Queen presided over a huge historical era from the age of the great European empires through decolonization. To a certain extent, the modern Commonwealth is at least partly her invention. The new king seems to like being head of the Commonwealth precisely because it's not in a formal sense, a constitutional position. So he feels he can talk about the climate and racism and all kinds of things to his heart's content as head of the Commonwealth when he's in Kenya. As opposed to just boring constitutional stuff when he's not quite so, the role of king isn't quite so liberating.
Yeah, it's complicated. I mean, in the case of Canada, the statutes were changed there in the late 40s, so the king of the United Kingdom is also the king of Canada, and when he comes to Canada, he is His Canadian and Britannic Majesty.
I think they've actually changed. In 1952, the Queen was crowned in Canada Queen of the United Kingdom, Canada, and our other realms of territories. And this guy now was just proclaimed King of Canada and of his other realms and territories. Is King of Canada a real thing to you?
Yes, it is, but I think the long-term viability of a non-residential monarchy is questionable, and I'm not saying that as a Republican agitating to get rid of this king, but Canada is a G7 country of 40 million people, and to have the ostensible chief of state show up through no negligence, just the way he's stretched around, for a week every 2 years or something like that. I don't know that is actually going to work durably, and that's not a rap on him. I just think I just have my doubts about it as an arrangement. And so, a number of you kindly got my book, The Canadian Manifesto, which especially to non-Canadians will be completely incomprehensible, so I don't recommend you read it. But I do make the point that I thought the status of chief of state should be changed. We should have a Canadian chief of state and have the monarch as co-chief of state, and then try and do more with the upper echelon of the Commonwealth and try and make the UK, now that it's out of the European Union, and Canada and Australia, New Zealand, Singapore, and maybe a couple of the more advanced places. We've got to be realistic about this. You know, we're not going to have federal union with Zimbabwe. You know, but to make them a bit an alliance that where as much is shared as the countries are comfortable with, but we're not trying, as Europe is, to force people to accept a central authority. And just see if we can make that work. And that would give a new dimension to the role of the monarch. This is my idea for what it's worth. By the way, it's not been taken up by anybody.
My jaw dropped when I read that passage. He wants to rename the country the Royal Republic of Canada, Samantha. And I know we live in a world where all kinds of contradictions can be tied up together. And actually, it's not dissimilar. If our Irish friends, Anne and Phelim, are here, it's not dissimilar to what De Valera did in 1936, when he had the president as the head guy within the country, and then the king signing all the treaties and accrediting all the ambassadors and things. So the Royal Republic model has been tried before.
My precedent was when Napoleon came back from Elba, he set up the Republic of the Empire of France.
Does that work for you, Samantha?
I think perhaps this is just my staunch monarchism showing through, but I think that the Royal Republic has the same ring to it as Queers for Palestine. And that I just think that...
Okay. That's telling Conrad. I think, I don't know how we can improve that, but certainly Queers for Palestine as a constitutional model is something that Commonwealth countries might wish to do at their peril. I want to thank my two special guests. These are very weird times for the world. They're weird in the United States, which is becoming a kind of royal republic with these various hereditary families. And Gavin Newsom, somebody was telling me that Gavin Newsom is married into Nancy Pelosi's family. And and it's like dynastic marriages. Yeah, that's right. The ex-wife, Kimberly Guilfoyle, is now part of the... So it is like dynastic marriages in medieval Europe. So maybe it should be... Maybe the Americans should try out the Royal Republic of the United States before we have to take it up in Canada. But these are dramatic times, and they seem to be fast-moving times, too. So I certainly hope... the lovely Princess of Wales in that bunker in Kiev is doing okay, and that she will emerge from it sometime soon. I would like to thank our two guests, Samantha Smith and Conrad Black. We are cruising towards Mexico, the only stop on this tour that is not part of His Majesty's dominions, so maybe when Conrad gets there, he'd like to plant a red ensign or there and claim it for the king. Thank you very much. We will see you next time. Thank you.
Join us next time for another edition of The Mark Stein Show. The Mark Stein Show is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. All rights reserved.